Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we are continuing to extend our deep dive series on suicide prevention for veterans. And like I said before, it's not just for suicide prevention, the way that we've kind of morphed our series, but it's also mental health support too. And today I'm honored to be joined by CEO and founder of Victor Tech, Gregory Jooms. Gregory is a Marine Corps veteran of the War of Iraq who, after leaving the military service in 2010, turned to a career of high threat security contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Greg eventually transitioned to civilian life for the second time in 2015. And having a difficult time adjusting to civilian life and having issues with addiction and going through divorce, Greg found his new purpose, helping veterans adjust by developing a tool for them to find the help and resources in their cities. Thank you so much for joining us, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, why you joined the military, some personal stuff.
Just get right into it, huh?
Perfect.
Just a little, who is Greg? Who are we talking to?
Great question. I just recently kind of put it all together, actually, over the past couple of years. But originally, I'm from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. I had a pretty nice childhood growing up, hanging out on my friend's farms, riding bikes around, hanging out by Lake Michigan. It was a really nice place to grow up. Ended up enlisting in the Marine Corps when I was 17. I actually had the Marine Corps recruiter come to my house for my 17th birthday, so my mom could sign the parental consent waiver because I wasn't 18 yet. And I wanted to get a jump start on my military career by getting a year of inactive service taken out of the way. I wanted to be an infantryman. I wanted to be on the front lines, on the ground, doing all the fun stuff I could. I wanted to be a part of something. I didn't want to go to college. I wasn't much of an academic student growing up. Didn't like doing homework. I did really well on tests. I liked doing the schoolwork, just not doing stuff when I got home. So college to me was just like, it's not something I'm really super excited about. But I wanted to be a part of the war in Iraq after watching 9/11 happen and seeing everything kind of go down. It was like, all right, well, I want to be a part of something. I want to be a part of history. So I didn't originally choose the Marine Corps. I wanted to go into the Army and be an Army Ranger. But when I first walked into the recruiter's office, it was an Armed Forces recruitment center. So you had every branch there. And the Marine Corps office was the first office that you had to walk past to get to the any other office. And the recruiter at the time, he kind of called me out. He's like, what are you doing? Where are you going? I'm like, well, I'm going to go talk to the Army. And he kind of like called me out. He's like, why would you do that? I mean, it was a really good question. It's like, well, I want to be a Ranger. He's like, well, you know, we're better than them. I'm like, okay. Sure, I'll talk to you. And I ended up spending a couple hours in the Marine Corps recruiter's office looking at all of his photo albums from deployment and listening to his stories. And I was just enamored by this lifestyle and how the Marine Corps regarded themselves as being like the best and the brightest and the backbone of military operations. So that was kind of it for me. I was pretty sold on the idea. And I participated in all their events. You know, they had high school students that could go to these poolie functions. And basically, it was like teaching you about the Marine Corps history and the traditions and working out once a week after school with all the other enlisted high school kids. It was really great. And then 2006, when I graduated high school, it's been about a month, not just shy of a month, before I went to boot camp. And that was it for me. I was in Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego for 13 weeks. And then from there, I was stationed at Camp Pendleton in San Diego County, deployed to Iraq in 2007 to 2008, part of George Bush's troop surge. Everything kind of went downhill after that. I came back a different person. I was engaged before I deployed. I got my fiance pregnant before I deployed. So I came back to as a 19-year-old kid with a soon-to-be son and a fiance that I had married the month after I got back. And I came back a different person. Just a completely different person. That's kind of how everything started. I was separated. I discharged in 2010. And from there, I went back to Sheboygan, Wisconsin. And I went back to Sheboygan, Wisconsin without a network or a group of people or a community to really keep me on the straight and narrow. I just continued to screw up. I was a abusing cocaine and drinking excessively every day, working a very meaningless job selling cars. Everything that I thought that being a civilian would be was just completely horrible, right? I missed the Marine Corps. I missed my friends. I missed going to the range. I missed the ridiculous hikes. I missed everything. And I was in a really, really bad position. I ended up putting my son and my wife on a plane back to Japan because that's where she's from, and not knowing when I'd be able to see them again. And I just knew that I had to get them away from me and my bad habits and what I was doing. It just wasn't good.
I am fascinated by the stories, and your story is so interesting. And there's a common thread between your story and some of the other stories that I've listened to over the past month and a half, where the transition is so hard, especially you being such a, basically a kid going into the military, and that's your time to grow up, but you grew up in a completely different environment. So then you're thrust back into, you know, our civilian reality where you're expected to know how to do taxes and take care of a child and take care of a wife, where you've not been exposed to that at all in the past, however many years you were there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a really good point that you bring up. A lot of people talk about like, oh, it must be, you know, the PTSD and being in combat that like causes you to be so all over the place. And like to the point of having to like do your taxes and stuff, those little things like going grocery shopping, knowing how to cook for yourself, knowing how to get a primary care physician, like everything that most adults figure out, you're kind of like in this accelerator program where like you have to figure it out. And there really isn't anybody there to teach you these things, or at least for me, there wasn't. I mean, I had my family and I had my friends, my mom, my dad, but I mean, I don't know. It just didn't stick, right? Like I didn't know the questions to ask. They didn't know how to talk to me. They kind of assumed that because the way I carried myself, like I didn't need any help. And I felt like I didn't need any help, but in reality, I just needed somebody to sit down and listen to my stories and just hear me out, because I went from feeling like the king of the world, being told I'm the best and brightest warfighter out there, because that's what the Marine Corps teaches you. They want you to feel like you are the best because you can't doubt yourself when you're in combat. And then I got out and I'm like, holy crap, I don't know anything. And that really had a toll, because I thought I was this person in my head. And you get out and you're like, holy crap, well, I'm not this person at all. Like I feel like an idiot. I don't know how to do any of these simple tasks. And so you're just trying to like figure it out without any help. And it was just one thing after another. So I finally hit rock bottom in 2010, where I was like running out of money. I wasn't selling any cars because I didn't believe in selling people a car for like a ridiculous interest rate and ruining them. So I wasn't a good car salesman because I had so much integrity where like, I'm not going to sell you a car if you just told me that your home is in foreclosure. It just wasn't a good industry for me. Mm-hmm. And I was working at a nightclub doing security, which just kind of allowed me to fuel my drug habits. It just wasn't good. So I ended up packing up my car in 2011 and moving out to Denver, Colorado, because one of my friends that I grew up with, and I don't even know why I moved out there. Like this kid was a bully to me growing up, but I was looking for any opportunity to get away from where I was. So I moved out there thinking I would be making $20, $25 an hour or whatever he told me. And I finally get a job at the same place he was working, valeting cars, parking cars in downtown Denver. And I ended up getting a job at a hospital where the valet service was complimentary and people didn't tip. So I'm making like $5, $6 an hour. My car's getting it's trying to get repossessed, but they can't find it because it's parked on private property and I can't drive my car because I don't have any gas and I'm too afraid to drive it because I might get it repossessed. Got catfished out there by an online dating person. Everything just sucked so bad. And I remember just like feeling like I have nothing. Like how do I get out of this? It was like, you have to be resilient because at the end of the day, like you're in control now. You're in control of how your day is going to be good or if it's going to be bad. Like you ultimately, at the end of the day, you're at the helm. And I remember waking up and just feeling like the most worthless I've ever felt. Like, this is dumb. Like, why am I still doing this? Definitely suicidal thoughts. But I knew that there was other things. Like, you just have to keep trying something. Like, you can't just be stagnant. And I was stagnant for many months. Like, okay, this sucks. Like, somebody's going to give me a job, right? And the job fairy actually never does come to your house, no matter how many job applications you put under your pillow, you're not going to just get a job like that. So I remember I woke up and it was like late morning. I applied for a job with Triple Canopy to be a security contractor in Kuwait. And that was my plan all along when I was getting out of the Marine Corps. It was like, I'm going to be a security contractor overseas because it's great money and I get to do the same line of work that I was doing in the Marine Corps. My habits at the time, and I was dating somebody who was probably the worst person that I could be dating, that was just very, very much trying to just like not make me do, like every decision that I made between 2010 and 2011 was just the worst. And I had this person telling me to make these bad decisions, but I was so lost that I didn't know the type of people that I was listening to. I went, fast forward back to being in Denver again, and I applied for this job, and next day or two, I woke up to an email from the recruiter saying, hey, we think you'd be great for this gig. We want to move forward with the onboarding process. And I remember this feeling of just like, holy crap, like this is like, I could go from making like this peanuts, like minimal, like I had fainted twice at my neighbor's house when I was living in Denver because I just couldn't afford food. And he was a physical therapist. He's like, do you have diabetes or low blood sugar? I'm like, no. Oh, when was the last time you ate? And I was like, well, like 3 days ago. I think I might have had like a couple bites of food here or there, but yeah, it's the last meal I can remember. And he's like, well, you're going to come eat dinner with my girlfriend and I every night until you get back on your feet. And I was like, this is really nice. But then again, like the Marine Corps mentality of like, holy crap, like I can't even help myself. And I'm supposed to be able to be like self-sufficient. When in reality, like when you're in the Marine Corps, you're dependent on so many different factors. Like somebody brings you mail, somebody brings you food, somebody brings you ammunition, somebody flies you in and out, somebody drives you places when you're on a deployment. Like everybody is helping each other out. So for veterans to think like, I don't need any help or I can't ask for help, it's like everything that you're saying you're doing wrong because you think you need to help yourself. Like the military didn't teach you that. The military taught you how to rely and be dependable on the people left and the right of you. So I get this job and I'm working within 2 months. I'm working in Kuwait for 12 hours a day, looking out in the desert, just doing nothing. You're sitting there for 12 hours a day, looking into the night. There's really no threat up there, but we have to be there anyways. So I went from making like less than $1,000 a month to making $7,000 a month, living in an apartment in Kuwait City. And it was cool. I mean, I started to get my life together, and that started a career about four and a half years of high threat contracting, where I've held positions from a security manager to a risk management consultant to a personal security detail member to running intelligence operations in southern Afghanistan with local Afghan nationals that were on our security team. It was basically the most fun I've had in my life because I was in control. I felt like I was my own action movie star in my own film. So it was really, really great. But that was like putting a Band-Aid. You're just putting off the inevitable. Like I went and I tried to transition for a year and I failed horribly. And now I'm doing this really great job where like I love it and I feel really cool again. And it was great, but it's not sustainable. Like you don't grow old and like retire out of that environment. Like you either get hurt or you run out of contracts to go on, and then you have to eventually find an actual job. So in 2015, I left that line of work to work at Groupon as a security specialist. So I was part of their executive protection team, and I was investigating any threats against the company. So like disgruntled employees, angry customers, angry vendors, angry shareholders. It's my job to find out if this person is actually going to come to our office and do somebody harm, or they're just upset. And a lot of people are always upset. So that was pretty much an unpurposeful job for me. I didn't feel like anything I did mattered. I
kind of see you as the guy in Office Space.
Yes.
Where people are asking for the TPS reports and there's just this blank stare.
Yeah. Like, is this really necessary? Like, are you going to read the security assessment that I send you or this threat assessment on this travel? Or are you still going to travel anyways? You're going to travel anyways because you're a billionaire and you're going to go there and it's going to be fine. It's not like you're traveling to red zones or like you're not going into like Pakistan to go do an investor meeting. Like you're going to Cabo San Lucas or you're going to the UK or whatever. it just wasn't meaningful. I mean, I remember thinking, like, sitting at my desk and I had these old pictures from when I was contracting and just looking at them and being like, dang, I used to do some seriously cool stuff. And now I'm playing the corporate runaround. I just didn't feel like myself. So when working at Groupon, I got in touch with, we brought in a group called Bunker Labs, and their job is to, they're a nonprofit organization that helps veterans become entrepreneurs. And we brought them in for a Veterans Day panel discussion. And I was like, blown away. I was like, holy crap, nobody ever told me I could be an entrepreneur. Like, I knew I could be a cop or a security guard, or I could own a bar, or I could be a firefighter, I could work in civil service, or I could work at the post office, because I had known these people, you know, other veterans that have done these jobs. So, but I hadn't, there's really known any entrepreneurs who are veterans that did anything besides make a t-shirt company or an apparel company. So I remember my biggest takeaway from that panel discussion was, like, you can be an entrepreneur if you can solve somebody's problem. And I was like, whoa, I know a problem that I had, and I bet other people had it. And so I went back to what it was like getting out of the Marine Corps and failing so miserably by not having a community or knowing who wants to hire me or who's going to value my skill set or where I can find mental health care. Just kind of like a central platform of, like, hey, I need help, but I don't know how to ask or who to ask. So that's when I started with the idea of, like, how about a mobile application that could be like a digital marketplace for veterans and their families looking for various services, kind of like an Angie's List type thing. So that's what I did from then on. Was working on it while I was working at Groupon on the side. And then I got laid off in September of 2016. And it was either go back to contracting or take on this new challenge. So I decided I wanted to challenge myself, and I ended up getting an office without having any, like, any revenue coming in or anything like that. And I just kind of went all in.
So how did you find your partners?
I didn't really have to find them. They found me. I used to do a lot of, like, speaking engagements and pitch competitions. And I was pitching at the Chase Auditorium downtown Chicago, and that's where I met my co-founder, Weston Pulaski. He came up to the stage after all the pitches were done, and he's like, he just had this big smile, and he was, like, really amped up. He's like, oh, hey, man, everything you said, man, I loved it. I was like, oh, cool, dude, thanks. He's like, if you ever need any help, man, just let me know. I was like, okay, cool, yeah, I need all the help, because I was doing this all by myself and really not knowing where to turn and what to do. He started coming into the office at WeWork for a little while, and eventually, like, he was just there all the time. Like, I can't even, and we both laugh about it, because, like, people ask that same question, like, how did you get involved with this? And he just kind of was like, well, I just kept showing up, and then I quit my job. And he was a director of veteran services at a university in North Chicago. Yeah, man, he just quit his, I remember he's like, oh, I just quit my job. I was like, you what? Like, I don't need that stress and pressure. And he's like, no, man, it's my decision. I want to do this full time and, like, make something of it. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Well, welcome aboard. And then from there, we've had volunteers come and go, interns come and go, other team members that came on for a few months and then realized that the startup life is very difficult, and it's not something you get rich doing, because it's a startup. It's not an established business with customer channels and reoccurring revenue. Like, we get some money coming in here or there, but it's not enough to be like, here's your salary and here's your health and wellness benefits. Like, we can't do that. That's how a lot of my partners, they all found me, or there are people that were in my network. They're like, hey, man, can I help you out? I just feel like I'm really stagnant at my job and I want something different. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to promise you a rose garden, but it's going to be hard, and we'll take as much work as you're willing to put in. You know, I've never really held any of these people to, like, you have to be here at this time and stay until this time. Like, nope, if you're volunteering, like, come and go as you please. But if you're taking on a project, like, that's yours. Let me know if you can't do it.
And I'm sure as hard as I can never say this word right.
Entrepreneur.
Being your own boss. Yeah. Starting a business. Entrepreneur. Yeah. I'm not even going to try anymore. But that word, you know, it's better than selling cars, right?
Yes. It was a lot better, because you're selling something that you're passionate about, and something that you think can actually help people. So my biggest thing is helping people. Like, I liked that idea. It's not like, oh, I helped you find the car of your dreams. It's like, no, I helped you find something to get you on your feet, or help you find financial assistance or mental health care. And, like, that amped me up way more than trying to sell somebody a piece of metal that's going to depreciate like instantly when they drive off the lot.
So explain Victor itself and how does it work?
We're a website and more importantly, we're a mobile application on Android and iOS. How it works is we're essentially a digital marketplace. So we're not going to help you write a resume, but we're going to help connect you to groups in your area that will help you write a resume. If you're looking for somewhere to save some money in the greater Chicago area, that's what we have on the platform as well. We have daily local deals. So a small business in the Chicago area that's like, hey, well, we want to try to capture more veterans as loyal customers because statistically veterans are more loyal to businesses who openly support them. So if you're looking to save money with them, that's great. And if you're looking to find a local employer, it may not necessarily be a career, but a job that you're looking to just, I need some money coming in or I need a side job, such as like being a doorman at a nightclub or helping a roofing company. We try to like get those little gigs out there. We're not going to we don't plan on placing you in the career of your dreams, but we want to help you get into a job where you can experience the workforce without having like a high demand type of role. Now, the whole idea is I want to get veterans into different jobs so they can experience what they like and what they don't like, not at the expense of the employer. Like, I'm not going to put a guy in your business for a month knowing he's going to leave. Like, this is somebody who, you know, like if it's an industry, like a service industry, like at a bar or a restaurant, like your attrition rate is already pretty high. Like, people are coming and going. And you're really not expecting people to stay for the rest of their life. But that 4 or 5 month job can be very detrimental to somebody who's looking to make ends meet for a while till they figure out what it is they really want to do.
Because you had to go through trial and error.
Oh, yeah.
Manually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I had to figure out and fail. And I mean, I was a Postmate driver. I used to deliver people's food and items in Chicago when I was between contracts because I couldn't find a gig that would pay enough. Sold cars, did a little bit of like contracting stuff on the side. Did security on the south side of Chicago. Like I've done all these things and I figured out what my strengths and weaknesses are and what I don't like and what I do like. And more importantly, the type of people that are out there. And I think that was one of the most informative things was figuring out what people are really like in different areas of being a civilian. Because in the military, like a lot of people are different, but everybody has something that's the same about them. So getting out and really experiencing different people's personalities, I think is something that I found very helpful. I don't think I really realized that until recently. So like our whole mission is to keep veterans and their families happy, healthy, informed, and employed. In a nutshell, that's what we're trying to do, and that's what we're trying to continue doing.
Is this a nationwide service, or is it just based in Chicago?
We are a regional-based startup. We didn't want to be like a lot of the startups that raise a bunch of money, and then they go in and say, well, we're going to do this great thing for everybody in the United States. When it's like, well, the military doesn't do stuff like that. We go in and identify strategic areas where we can make the biggest impact, whether that's working with local nationals to turn them into their own fighting force, doing the whole hearts and minds, giving soccer balls away to kids to get information. Like, we wanted to take on Chicago because there's over 350,000 veterans in Cook County. Great Lakes Naval Station is right up the road, about 30 miles. They see about 100,000 service members and veterans come through there each year. And Midway and O'Hare International Airports, together, they see over 380,000 service members and retirees coming through their visitor centers every year. So we know there's a lot of veterans coming and going to Chicago, and we know there's a lot already here. And it's the third largest metropolitan area in the United States. So there's a lot of businesses here. It's a pretty veteran-friendly area. There's a lot of tax benefits and property tax benefits here for veterans. So a lot of people say it's really difficult and expensive to live here. But surprisingly enough, for veterans, it's pretty manageable. For instance, if you have a 10% disability rating or more, you can ride all the public transportation services in Chicago for free. And that saves me like $200 to $250 a month just because I get to ride for free. I get half of my property taxes back on my house every year for being a disabled veteran. Like, there's so many benefits here. And that's like what we're trying to educate our users on to make it attractive for veterans to either relocate here or just maybe come to school here for a bit, check it out and see what they like about it. Because there's a lot to offer. It's a really great city. And it's a big city, but it's not a New York. It's not an LA. It's a big city in the Midwest. So it has a different feel to it.
And there's the community too. It's like you said, when you were in Iowa, there was nothing there for you. So it might be more beneficial for a service member to move away from their family, but move to a community and visit their family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like being in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, like it was difficult. People weren't there, but here, like there's different meetups, there's different groups, there's different activities for veterans to do. And being near your family is great, but if that's like your only thing that you're holding near, and really beneficial to get away from your family for a while and kind of either reinvent yourself or be your own person. And I think that's one of the really valuable things, because you got to reinvent yourself when you were in the military. Most people didn't go there with their graduating class. You know, I don't think anybody did. You get to go into a different environment and be your own person. And I think that's really important when you get out of the military, is you essentially have to reinvent yourself again. And coming to a big city or a new city, it can give you that opportunity.
And especially too, because you didn't come back the same person. You don't want to try to live up to those expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was weird. It was weird. You don't want to be that same person. It's like, I wanted to get kind of far away from the whole like veteran, like bro status, like being super patriotic and red, white and blue. And, you know, we don't like Muslims. Like, no, man, I used to live with my guards in Afghanistan. That was I was the only American on that contract, and the rest of them were all Afghan nationals. Like, I learned so much about different cultures and different people, and it's really stressful and it's very tiring to just constantly be this person on guard and thinking that, you know, bad things could happen at any moment. Like, yeah, of course they could, but you kind of have to be observational and take in your surroundings of like, is this the type of environment for me to still act like I'm in the military or on a deployment? I see a lot of veterans, and yes, PTSD is a very real thing. And I have buddies who still will tell me, like last week, I had a guy telling me that he feels like people are following him everywhere, and he sits in his house with the lights off, and that's when he feels most safe. And I was like, well, a couple things, man. I don't think you're that cool for people to follow you around. And secondly, if you feel more safe with the lights off, like who feels safe with the lights off? Like, why wouldn't you have your lights on? Like, it's scary. The dark is scary. I think a lot of it's just like a cry for help in a way that they feel more either macho or more like that badass they were when they were in the military. And I think it's really important for people to like reinvent themselves when they get out and like take the military like it was an internship. You don't hear people in corporate world or and their jobs constantly talking about what it was like to go get their boss coffee every day. Like that sounds ridiculous. I think that's one of my biggest gripes, is how so many veterans like live in their glory days. Like the high school quarterback who didn't do anything after high school, but still talks about that game that he won.
Are there any nonprofits or organizations that Victor Tech works with, or you guys are partnering with it all?
Yeah. So we work with the Mission Continues to help Travis Mannion hire their program director. Work with Merging Players and Vets. And Merging Players and Vets, they are an organization that brings retired pro athletes and combat veterans together to work out and talk about their transition, because both sides are going through a transition. And one's a little different than the other, but it's still a transition nonetheless. We work with the Road Home Program here in Chicago. They are a nonprofit hospital group that provides free mental health care to veterans and their families. And it's not just a local thing. They will fly veterans and their families or their girlfriends or boyfriends and their kids to Chicago for their 3-week outpatient care or inpatient care. I think it's outpatient. Who else? Oh, we work with some other smaller groups here in the Chicagoland area, like Chicago Veterans is another one. Yeah, that's about it for now. Just because these are all organizations that have a footprint in Chicago. So those are national programs, but we're trying to focus more on the regional impact. You know, we don't want to go after a national program and say, well, we're going to be in every city you are. It's like, well, we can't actually do that without their help first. So it's proving the model works and proving that we can provide value and then going from there.
And hopefully once it does get some momentum, it will be in every city and every county where there's veterans.
Yes. And that's another thing that's kind of difficult too, is yeah, we want to do that, but we know that we're not going to be able to help everybody. Right? Like we're not going to be somewhere in the backwoods of Idaho where there's 10 veterans, you know, we have to go where we can help the most people. And that comes down to hopefully changing the relocation narrative of like going back to your hometown. We want veterans to be able to sign onto our website, our application, and be like, here are the 10 best places for you to move to based on the communities that we've that we've stood up or created for you. If you want to live by the water, like here's Chicago, here's Florida. It's kind of like that. Like, because when you get out, I remember one of the hardest things for me was like, holy crap, like, where do I go? Like, I think I should just go back to my home of record because I know people there. Had I, if I would have had the opportunity or tool to be like, this is what I want to do. This is the type of place I want to live. Hit enter. And then it kicks out like the top three places that I should move based on what I'm looking for. Like, that's where I want to get to. Because, I mean, everybody kind of, you know, maybe not everybody, but it's really nice when you have something that gives you direction based on facts and statistics and helps you be a little less indecisive.
Because you're so used to somebody telling you what to do all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost like you're institutionalized in a way. Like, you get out and then you're like, holy crap, I have to do everything on my own. Like, I'm so used to just showing up places. Like, be here at 5:30 in the morning. Cool, I'm there. And then someone else tells you what to do. And then someone else tells you what to do. And then someone says, okay, you can go home now. And you're like, oh, great. Same thing tomorrow. And then you just do the same thing. Like, you're kind of like in robot mode, autopilot.
And that's no fun after you get out, because the thrill of what you were doing is gone, and the monotony right. of nothing. I can see how that would be challenging for mental health. And I kind of jumped around a little bit. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Things that you wish everyone knew about mental health or suicide from your perspective and what you've been through and what you've seen?
I think it's all relative to the individual's experiences. Like, I used to be the kind of person that when my friends or family or just someone would complain or say they're sad or depressed, I'd be like, well, you know, you think you're depressed. Like, think about this. It's like, oh, well, you know, that thing that they're talking about might just be the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And I think that one of the biggest things is being empathetic. And that's something that's helped me out a lot, to like think about what this other person is going through. I used to think mental health was just kind of like a sham, which is so stupid, because I hadn't seen a therapist or anybody for many years, probably since my parents got divorced when I was like 10. And I just didn't really understand it. Like, okay, I talked to this person and then what? Like, I'm healed, like I'm better. And then it's like, no, like, you're talking to that person because you need to talk to somebody. And it'd be weird if you were constantly talking to your friends about all your weird problems. But now I don't think it's so weird. Like, I went and attended the Road Home program from Rush University last year. And I was like, holy crap, this is kind of nice. Like, this person just wants to like listen to me and then offer suggestions and ask me questions and kind of get me to critically think about some of the actions that I've taken or the words that I've used and the relationships I've had with people. And it was really good. So I think that the biggest thing is like, just think about other people sometimes. I know suicide and, you know, harming yourself may sometimes seem like the easiest way to get out, especially if you're going through financial hardships. I think that's one of the biggest things. Like, holy crap, I don't have any money. Like, what's the point? Like, well, that's up to you. Like, you can get more money. It's just, it takes hard work. And it's really hard when you don't have people giving you direction all the time. Because I've multiple times have been like, what do I do now? Like, how do I get out of this? Like, do I go to college? Do I find a different job? Am I going to be happy doing either one of those? I was only happy when I was deployed and with my friends. And it's like, it's a hard chapter to close and start over, because those were, for a lot of people, that was like the most fun times they've ever had. And when it's over, it's over. And then you have to like be a real adult. It sucks being sad and it sucks being angry. And it's a lot more fun being alive and just, you know, being resilient. For many people, it's really not it doesn't stay bad forever. Like, it gets easier, but it takes a lot of work sometimes. Sometimes it's not easy, like getting back up after you're knocked down repeatedly, talking to people and talking about your problems, because everybody has problems. Everybody feels sad sometimes. People feel stressed at times. And the stresses may not be things that you'd be stressful about, but that person is. And that just goes back to the empathy part. It's okay to listen to people, and it's really okay to be listened to.
Yeah, no judgment.
Yeah, but that's hard, because we're constantly being thrown in our face, like judging people, like, oh, this person's doing this, this person's doing that. And I think subconsciously, everybody's kind of afraid of being judged. Like, am I making the right decisions? Am I wearing the right clothes? Am I watching the right movies or TV shows? People have a hard time being themselves because they feel like they have to be somebody else. Like, I struggle with that. Like, oh, I think that I'm this person in my head when, you know, if you don't stop and think, like, who am I to my girlfriend? Who am I to my friends? Who am I to my family? Like, you're a different person to every single one of these individuals. You're not the person that you think you are, which is like a different way to think about things.
And if you looked at yourself from the outside, would you like yourself? Would you want to hang out with yourself?
Exactly. That's a big one that, like, once I figured that out, like, holy crap, like, think about this. You know, would I hang out with myself? Or am I being the person that I would want to hang out with and not thinking about these other people? Like, am I just trying to appease myself?
That's huge.
It's a balance, yeah.
So how do we find out more about Victor?
Well, there's many ways. You could probably click on a link that's in this this podcast. You could go to our website, which is www.victorapp.io. You can search us on Google, Victor Tech. You can search us on Facebook, which is also Victor Tech Inc. All of our social handles are the @ Victor Tech Inc. Yeah, there's lots of ways. We have a documentary that's out there that studio in New York did on us last year. Yeah, there's a lot.
And absolutely, the link for your website and your social media stuff, we'll put it in your episode page so that it's easy clicking for everybody.
Awesome.
I'm going to throw you a curveball. It's not on our list, but I like hearing fun and exciting stories from people, or a story from maybe when you were deployed or on your contract, something entertaining to close out with.
Ooh, there's lots of stories.
Because I had a guy talking about poop in a IED vehicle, and that one, you got to top that one.
Oh, man. I do have a poop one for my rack. It was really bad. So, all right, I'll just get into it. So, in the Middle East, people usually don't sit down on toilet seats. They kind of just like do the squatting thing, which is actually like how you're supposed to poop, I guess. But they, our two interpreters at our patrol base, we assume it's one of them. So it was late night. I go to use the porta potty because we had two that would get cleaned once a month. So middle of summer, Iraq, it's pretty gross. Yeah. So I walk out of my hooch and I'm walking over and I'm like, okay, I had the lighters over there, like cigarette lighters on the bottom. They have like these little flashlights and mine was red. So I walk in, I just look to make sure there's toilet paper. And I'm like, okay, cool. There's toilet paper in here. Put my M16 in the crack of the door. So the door stays wide open just because the smell is like unbearable. And I turn around and I sit down and I'm like, okay, cool. Do my business. And I go to wipe and like, there's like heavy resistance on my like lower back. And I'm like, what's there? Well, turns out one of the interpreters pooped on this toilet seat and I couldn't see it in the middle of the night. And I sat in this guy's poop.
Oh my God.
And it was so bad. Like it was very bad. I am like stripped down naked in front of our hooch. And I'm just taking baby wipes and hand sanitizer and just like cleaning my body off. And one of my buddies comes out and he's like, what the hell are you doing? And I was like, I just sat in poop. Yeah, it was really bad. I mean, I have like other, that's probably the worst poop story that I have experienced over there. But yeah, as far as funny stories, yeah. I mean, I had a surprise birthday in Afghanistan. Somebody made me an Indian guy made me a cake that my team members put together, wished me a happy birthday, happy 26th birthday. And it was like the first surprise party I've ever had at the time. So I was like, oh, this is really great. Yeah, a lot of things. Smoking hookah with my local guards and swapping stories and listening to what it was like when the U.S. first started bombing the Taliban and stuff like that in the early 2000s. And everything was just very, very eye-opening. Stepped on a nail, went through my foot once, which was pretty brutal, yeah. Yeah, Afghanistan was contracting was far more exciting than anything I ever did in the Marine Corps, surprisingly enough, just because I went so many different places. One time I had a guy, I was on a flight line waiting to catch a helicopter, a Black Hawk. It was around like midnight, maybe 1 a.m, and this guy that worked for my company, but at a different site, you know, meets me on the flight line. And he's like, here you go. Hands me a manila folder with $30,000 US cash in it. And I was like, well, wow, this is a lot of money. And I'm like, what's this? He's like, oh, this is your ops fund. There. I'm like, oh, okay. Why? He's like, well, how else do you think we get money out to this remote site? I'm like, oh, good point. He's like, these are for your bribes and your payroll and everything else that you need out there. And that was a very, very interesting sight. I used to sleep with two sets of body armor on my body and a helmet over my face just because we would be hit with mortars and VOG rounds. They're a grenade that's shot out of an AK-47 grenade launcher, similar to our 203s on our M16s. So it was a very, very bad sight. We were constantly getting hit from like 7 in the morning to like 5 at night. But yeah, as a contractor, that was pretty eye-opening.
That's insane. And that was the fun part.
And that was the fun part. I volunteered to go to that site because I heard it was really kinetic. And I was in my early, you know, mid-20s, but I think it was like 24, 25. And I thought it was just like the coolest. It's like, wow, this is really awesome. But looking back at it now, like that whole, the whole thing, it's just like a game. The whole contracting, like going to war. I don't know. It's really hard to continue to believe in what we're doing when it's like, where's the outcome?
Yeah, it seems like it'll never end too.
Yeah, this is a super long war. I mean, you have people that were born in 2001 that will be able to enlist in the military and deploy to Afghanistan.
Like, oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yep. It's a very interesting dynamic over there.
Well, we could totally get into that, but that would have to be another podcast.
It would.
But if you're interested, hit me up and we'll do another one.
Yeah, if you ever want to do another one, I'd be glad to. I like doing stuff like this.
Yeah. Is there any other closing thoughts that you want to say? Anything we didn't cover before we go?
And this is about mental health at the end of the day. So I think anybody who's listening to this, whether you're a veteran or not, don't be afraid to talk about what's bothering you. And to your friends, to your family, someone will listen. Yeah, I've had friends that it seems like every other day I see something on Facebook where another person has either, you know, a service member, a veteran, or a civilian, somebody's girl that I went to, that I used to work with in Denver. I just saw her on Facebook. Her husband committed suicide and they've been married for like 2 or 3 years. Oh, wow. He wasn't a veteran. It just seemed like every picture seemed very happy, but apparently he wasn't happy. So it's kind of hard to tell on the outside without really sitting down and like getting somebody to talk about themselves. And that's hard. That's a hard thing to do. It's hard to get someone to say, hey, I need help. Or, hey, this isn't what I'm thinking about doing. But at the end of the day, like, I honestly think taking your own life is one of the most selfish things that you can do. Sorry if that offends anybody who's had someone commit suicide in their family, but you're leaving everybody behind. Like, you can't take anybody with you. You're checking out early when you're not supposed to.
We want to keep everybody here. So
yeah, it's about keeping the team together, right? I mean, if it's your husband, your wife, your brother, your sister, you know, it's a coworker, you know, it's okay to ask somebody how they're really doing. I mean, everybody doesn't, oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm great. Okay. Well, every once in a while, it's okay to be like, you know, I'm not doing great. You won't sound weak. You won't sound insecure. It's the real thing. Like that person that asks you if you're doing great might also not be doing great. And that might be a conversation that arises out of that.
Yeah. Maybe for more for them than you.
Yep.
And it's okay not to be okay.
Yes, it is okay to not be okay.
Well, thank you, Greg, so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time out and talking about all of the things, even the poop story. I think that's one of my top poop stories so far. You're winning.
Thank you. Yeah. Iraq was very shitty.
And make sure to check out the App Store, Google Play Store for Victor if you are in the greater Chicago area. And maybe look for it a little bit later once they get something developed and some momentum going in some larger veteran areas as well. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast. And you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.